send it up, and it's not here yet. But,
he might have class two. I can't remember on him.
Before we get started, for the college council members, included in your packet that Mikhail gave you this morning, there's the college council events for the meeting on December 6th. If you try to fill that out and give it back to Mikhail before you leave today, I'm sure she would appreciate that for the reservations for that meeting and the social hour dinner at 5 o'clock or 5:30. Okay? Since some of the college council members were not in attendance at the last meeting, I would ask everyone to introduce themselves again today, and starting with Marie.
Marie Reagan, college council.
Chloe Ann O'Neill, college council.
Ronald Parker, college council.
Natalie Hickley, vice president for business affairs and administration.
Charles Fenner, faculty senator.
Joe Rich, college council.
Courtney Bish, dean of students.
Karen Spellosley, interim provost and vice president of academic affairs.
Tom Sauter, college counsel.
Dave Gerlach, vice president for advancement.
Tim Currier, college counsel.
Roger Charlo, college counsel.
Grace Burke, college counsel.
Travis Smith, acting director of public relations.
Lenora Vanderzee, chief of staff.
Joe Hoffman, acting president.
Michaela Young, assistant of the president.
Okay, thank you. Welcome, Charles, back as faculty senate representative. Was it a year ago, 2 years ago, you were also in the same position?
No, last time I was campus governance leader.
Oh, okay, all right.
It's like a European model. Campus governance leader is like the prime minister.
Okay.
I think Putin-ish rebirth here in another position.
It is probably better than being mayor of Toronto. You received the minutes of the September 10th meeting by email. The chair will entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
So moved.
Moved by Tim. Is there a second?
Second.
Second. Tom, any additions or corrections? All in favor? Approved. Thank you very much. New business, tobacco-free revised policy. Courtney Bish.
Yes. So initially our plan, as was the SUNY plan, was we were intending to move to a January 1st tobacco-free initiative on our campus. So as of January 1, we were intending to have no tobacco use of any kind on any location on our campus. I attended a SUNY Vice President's for Student Affairs meeting earlier in the semester and learned that, SUNY's kind of backtracked a little bit on their, January 1st date. So we've been encouraged to still move forward and still try to move toward tobacco-free, but we can do so in a more reasonable time frame than trying to rip the Band-Aid off on January 1st. So this January 1st, we will move to a tobacco-restrictive campus, which means that we've designated more areas as tobacco-free. We've removed the academic plaza, that will be completely tobacco-free, so the two gazebo areas that you can currently use tobacco in will no longer be permitted to use tobacco, and we also removed the parking lots as tobacco use areas. So at this point, the only remaining areas for tobacco use on the campus will be the four residence hall gazebos and the area behind Grass River Suites, 50 feet behind Grass River Suites, where students can still use tobacco. We're trying to reduce and still move forward while maintaining a reasonable time frame and a reasonable speed.
Are there any questions? Yes, John.
I have a question about banning electronic cigarettes. We define tobacco as tobacco and tobacco-derived products, but electronic cigarettes are not a derivative of tobacco. So by our very definition, we've got something that is not logical.
Part of the reason why we chose to go forward with the electronic cigarettes is because of the health risks that we've learned. They're not actually a healthy alternative to smoking. And at this point, we were trying to move toward reducing their use as well. But if that's up for discussion, that's completely fine. We're obviously significantly more concerned about tobacco use,
which
tobacco
we should be.
Products. Sure.
You know, I think everything I've read is that they're being viewed as an alternative to
mm-hmm.
tobacco, so they may not be FDA approved as a smoking cessation
exactly.
device, but
right.
they are certainly being used by folks trying to quit a regular smoking habit.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at what's in them, it's glycol
mm-hmm.
and flavoring, which are FDA approved.
Right, absolutely.
So
I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to push the smoking cessation, which we've seen success with. In fact, our health center staff were a little frustrated with the move to tobacco restrictive. They were pretty excited about the tobacco free because they've had a lot of students and staff come forward saying, okay, you know, I have January 1st as a target date for myself, you know, and I'm able to set a goal and I'm able to hopefully reach that goal with the cessation products. And now we've kind of thrown a wrench in that plan a little bit, but I don't know that the discussion about e-cigarettes is off the table, I guess, if that's something that the council would like to see us review.
It doesn't really matter to me. I just think that our policy ought to be logical. E-cigarettes are e-cigarettes. They're not a tobacco product. If we're going to ban them, we ought to say tobacco products and other smoking devices, including
sure.
e-cigarettes, but don't lump them in with something that's a derivative of tobacco because it isn't. I mean, it just, that's...
Yes.
With these new restricted areas, what's going to be the consequences if someone is found smoking?
Right now, the directive from SUNY is an educational response. So at this point, we are simply talking about trying to motivate students, faculty, and staff towards cessation. At this point, it's not a punitive response, so still remains educational.
They will be asked to stop.
They'll be asked to stop, and you know, they may be issued tickets by university police, but there's not a... Initially, there was a discussion, if everybody isn't aware, there was a discussion about a punitive response, meaning that if faculty and staff got in trouble for violating this policy, they could be referred to their supervisor for conduct and that sort of thing. That's not the approach we're taking at this point. It's we're asking you to stop, we're asking you to put out your cigarette, but it's an educational response.
So if someone chooses not to listen, university police would be the next?
If it's a student, we'll go through the student conduct system. If it's faculty and staff, if we're having consistent issues, we'll speak to supervisors in their relative area.
Yeah, the reason we backed off is because the legislation that was supposed to be passed was not. So therefore, there are really no teeth in this. But we had made such progress in moving forward, especially compared to some of the other campuses. One of them, I think Courtney said, has a 9-year plan to stop smoking.
I believe,
you know,
that was
to,
for Donia,
yeah.
A 9-year plan.
So, so we sort of have some momentum on this. So we'd rather not lose it.
Exactly.
But at the same point, we've lost the law that would have really given this some teeth. But I think just we'd like to move the bar just a little further on this. The e-cigarette piece is because it's part of the SUNY plan. So our thought was to incorporate it now rather than have to add in later.
But we can change the
But we can certainly change the wording. That would
wording
be that,
fine.
That
just to make
that,
it more
yeah,
accurate.
I agree.
I agree.
Intended, the legislation is still out there. It just hasn't been approved. It could be brought back up in future sessions, but it hasn't been approved. It wasn't approved in the May session, so.
Yeah, so what's going to happen is we're basically going to ban smoking in the academic plaza.
Any other questions? Tom, would you be willing to, rather than tabling it, to go ahead and approve it? And the Courtney would make those changes you suggested.
And I'll make sure that it gets sent back through Michaela to the council.
Sure. I'll make the motion.
John, move approval of the revised tobacco policy. Is there a second?
Second.
Second. Joe? any additional questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Approved. Thank you.
In the policy?
The student handbook revision. I think you see the copy of that too.
Oh, I am sorry about that. Yes, there were a couple of changes. The first was the tobacco policy. The other was that SUNY wanted us to clarify that in instances where students going for a hearing board were up for suspension or expulsion, that they were permitted to have an attorney as their support person if they so chose. So we wanted to make that correction, and we've actually already begun implementing that practice. We had hearings yesterday, and we notified those students if they'd like to bring an attorney as a support person that they were permitted to do so. So it's more of an informational change.
Any questions?
Just so I'm clear on it, the language says the supporter should not include lawyers except in cases where the college is recommending suspension or expulsion.
That's correct.
Should not. Sounds like a recommendation. Is that a should not or is it a shall not? What if it's a case that doesn't rise to the level of expulsion and a student decides to bring a supporter who is an attorney?
It's a shall not. So I think we need to change the wording to shall.
Okay. Good point.
Thank you for that. That's a good point.
Is there a reason why you decided to draw the line there?
Yes, and part of the reason is that we've had issues over the years with attorneys having a difficult time understanding the difference between a college judicial process and a criminal court proceeding, and so it's very difficult. The support person doesn't speak at all at the hearing. The support person is exactly what it's called. It's a person to be there for moral support, to help them understand the process if need be, to help them through the process, but they don't present a case. They don't speak, they can't ask questions, and this has been an ongoing issue. Most SUNY schools do not allow attorneys at campus judicial hearings, so we, with the advice of SUNY Legal, went forward with that recommendation.
Any other questions? I know the last college council meeting, the last one, there was a presentation on the
yes.
The appeal process and so on.
You did that.
I did
it
in
September. Yes. But it's still out there. There's still a lot of confusion about this whole thing. It seems to be, I don't know, just why.
Do you know what the, is there something I can help clarify? What a specific piece of confusion is?
I don't know. You know, I'm getting so old, I can't remember it. But I just hear people talking, you know, bringing up different, and they just don't understand it. Mostly from parents.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Students here on campus.
So maybe we can make a more concerted effort during orientation. We're going to be doing a focus on parents during our orientation, so that's a great suggestion that maybe we can do.
I'm wondering if there's any way you could have something printed that makes it kind of simple.
Sure.
That, you know, this is the
like
first
an overview
set,
of.
Yeah.
We can do that, absolutely.
I don't know. Like Tom probably reads this and he understands it. By the time I get to the end of it, I well, we're
don't assume too much, Ron.
Just a suggestion.
Okay, no problem. No, thank you. I appreciate that.
And maybe if that could be given out at the time of orientation.
Sure. That would help people understand. And I know, and the college judicial system can be very confusing, especially for parents. And, you know, we're trying to make it as transparent and easy to understand as we can. So I will try to draft up something, and maybe by the next time the council meets, I'll have something to show you that we've provided to parents.
Yeah, I think when I attended SUNY Canton, at that time, if you got in trouble, the president said you were kicked out, and there was no appeal.
Yeah, it was easier. Can we go back to that? We have a lot more standing in our way than that now.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
And it's confusing even for faculty and staff to understand all the nuance of all of the different laws and regulations that we now have to follow that make it more complicated than just saying, you know, you're suspended or like that. So, not a problem.
Do you need motion on that?
That was more of an FYI, right,
okay.
Courtney? Because SUNY
yes.
pretty much said that.
And there's a shall in both paragraphs.
Yeah. We'll change the
should
to
shall.
Should
to
shall. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Courtney.
Sure.
The advisory board appointment, you received a list of those, Karen.
And the list you received in the mail has been updated. There should be an updated list in your packet. So we have an advisory board, the physical therapy assistant advisory committee. Matt Akins is being appointed for, or has been appointed for a 3-year term. We have health fitness promotion advisory committee, James Betchell, Deanna Enrico, Robin DeRozier, Tad Johnson, and Jay Rigsby are all looking for 3-year terms. And then the two that were not on your original mailing, Decision Systems Advisory Committee, Michael Dermody and Joan Verses, are a 3-year term. Those are the appointments to the advisory committee that we're seeking.
And maybe, Karen, for the benefit of some of the newer college council members, and I don't know if we've ever talked about this for a while, how these appointments occur or how the individual...
The faculty and dean seek out members of the community that have expertise in the area, either mostly industry or practitioners, and they ask them to serve on the advisory committees. The advisory committees are the ones that meet at least once a year with the faculty and deans, and the president and the provost quite often attend, and they review the curriculum, the program outcomes, and make sure that we're teaching the students what industry wants them taught, so there's not a disconnect.
Okay, any questions? Chair will entertain a motion to accept the new appointees.
So moved.
By Rogers, second.
Second.
Boyan. All in favor?
Aye.
Approved. Thank you. The Halford Center for Renewable Energy resolution. And I think Dave Gerlach has some comments.
In your packet is a PowerPoint from the director of the CREST Center and a resolution. And I'll just state that this information is not in your resolution, but I will share it with the group. But it is confidential, please. Mr. Halford has given over $610,000 to the college at this point. $300,000 of that was to establish a charitable remainder trust, and upon his passing, those proceeds will fund the HVAC area alternative renewable energy systems equipment endowment. And with this approval, he intends to give another $100,000. So I told him to hold off on that $100,000 until this makes its way. And so before I read the resolution, because this gift is in the above $100,000, it both needs approval by Dr. Hoffman, the council, and the chancellor or her designee. Gifts over $1 million would need the Board of Trustees approval, and the guidelines lay that out. So in setting that up, again, please keep Mr. Halford's giving confidential, as that's not stuff we typically share. Whereas John L. Halford Sr. entered the United States Marine Corps at the age of 17, serving 4.5 years in the Pacific Theater during World War II. Whereas Mr. Halford is a graduate class of 1949 and received his Associates in Applied Science and Air Conditioning Engineering Technology. And whereas Mr. Halford worked for the Associated Universities of Long Island in research and nuclear reactor development at the Brookhaven Lab from 1952 to 1970, and was then the building maintenance manager for Suffolk County. Whereas since establishing the John L. Halford Senior Endowed Scholarship in 1989 and the John L. Halford Memorial Scholarship in 1999, Mr. Halford has also established the John L. Halford 1949 Nursing Endowed Scholarship, created two charitable remainder trusts that will support the John and Nelta M. Halford HVAC Area Equipment Endowment and Air Conditioning Engineering Technology and Alternative Renewable Energy Systems Lab Equipment, and has named three areas on campus: the Halford Faculty Office Building Lobby, the Halford Alumni Suite in the Ruse House Ice Rink, and the Halford Classroom in the Grass River Suites. And whereas Mr. Halford was the 2010 Distinguished Alumnus
and has inspired numerous SUNY Canton alumni and friends to support the college. Whereas Mr. Halford has served on the College Canton College Foundation Board of Directors, the Canton College Foundation Finance and Investment Committee, and the Canton College Foundation Audit Committee since 2004 and continues today. And whereas Mr. Halford has been a consistent donor to the foundation dating back to 1980, and whereas since graduation, Mr. Halford has dedicated himself to SUNY Canton, the community, unselfishly giving his time, energy, and resources for the betterment of all, serving in organizations such as the Masons, the Governor and Herman DeKalb Senior Citizens Groups, the Boy Scouts Administrative Council, and the Board of the United Methodist Church. And whereas the Canino School of Engineering represents the roots of Mr. Halford and other alumni career accomplishments, and whereas the Center for Renewable Energy and Sustainable Technologies will bring current industry-specific training to professionals in our area, provide training for those needing to change career paths and prepare for advancement, help businesses expand and diversify market penetration, and offer continuing education for retraining professional certification licensing, and whereas Mr. Halford's service, giving, career, and achievements are an inspiration to all who will enter the Center for Renewable and Energy Sustainable Technologies, therefore be it resolved that the College Council of the State University of New York College of Technology at Canton designate the Center for Renewable Energy and Sustainable Technologies as the Halford Center for Renewable Energy and Sustainable Technologies this, the 19th day of November 2013. I submit that for your hopeful approval.
Moved by Marie Reagan. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Dr. Burke. Any questions? Wonderful that we have alumni that are willing to contribute that kind of money to college. It's so important. All in favor?
Aye.
Approve. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any old business to come before our meeting today? I'm not aware of any. Okay, hearing none, we'll move on. The a little bit of information on the presidential search. Basically, I think it's moving along quite well. Like I mentioned before, the chancellor who would like to have us present names to her so she could recommend a candidate to the Board of Trustees at the March meeting. And whether or not we are able to do that, I'm not sure at this point, but it looks as though it's looking pretty good that that may well happen. But, of course, things can bog down, too. The deadline, I think, is the 19th for applications. Roughly, the RPA, Robert P. Allen search firm, they sent out information to approximately 17,000 individuals for recruiting, and it was all done by electronic email or electronic press or advertising, whatever you want to call it. The response has been very good. We intend to have a meeting roughly on November 26th, the first formal meeting of the search committee as far as considering candidates. And at that meeting, prior to that meeting, the RPA will establish a website, a confidential website that's available only to search committee members. And the search committee will have to review all of the applicants. And on the at the meeting, rather, on the 26th, at that time, we anticipate that we'll be narrowing that list down after having reviewed all the applicants to a certain number, I'm guessing 20. That's not cast in stone. And then from that list that the search committee determines on that date, RPA will then go ahead and do do further background checks on those individuals, verifying some references, and just to make a little bit more definite inquiry into the individual's credentials and verifying those credentials, as I understand it. And then we'll move from there. At the ACT meeting a couple of weeks ago in Saratoga Springs, I spoke with some other college council members that had been involved in a recent search or an ongoing search. And most of those campuses ended up with about 100 applicants. And that seemed to be kind of the average. From what I'm being told by Brandy Collins, the contact with RPA, that I'm guessing that that's where we'll end up with about 100. But I'm not sure of that, but it's just a guess.
And if I could just jump in, I wanted to make sure that Karen knew that if you would just reach out to the faculty members on the search committee and let them know that this is one of the most important things we do at the college, so rearranging their class schedule to accommodate these meetings is something that, you know, we certainly support. Having been in the classrooms for so many years, we can certainly rearrange an hour of class if you miss it. We haven't had this initiative since 20 years.
Right.
So it is key. So missing a class for that is certainly understandable.
I have one question. You're saying that we probably will get around 100 applicants. You might understand that prior to the 26th, we will be surveying all 100, or is it already going to be winnowed down?
No, we'll have access to all applications. So it's going to be kind of challenging.
I thought my understanding was we were going to have access to all applications, but they were going to group them as A's, B's, and C's, or 1's, 2's, and 3's.
Yeah, they may well do that. But
so,
so
we don't have to look at all 100.
Exactly.
We can just look at the A group if we want to, because it's the top 30
that's
or 40.
That's what I remember.
Okay. So are you saying you're not really that committed?
I'm going to read it twice. Just for you.
Tom's not committed.
No, that's good. I'm glad you pointed that out. No, you're absolutely right. But, you know, you may want to look at some of the other. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is that you do have access to all of them.
Access to all of them. Yeah.
So
there
one is
somebody in C that I think is
should be an A. That's the time we can hash that out.
No,
and Ron, do we know when we might have those?
Yes, I think I should know next week.
Okay.
Early next, maybe Monday.
When is the 26th?
A week from today.
Yeah.
So I think we need them tomorrow if we really got 100 to read through.
That's fine.
We should know this week.
Okay.
All right. I haven't talked to Brandy this week yet.
All right.
But as soon as
I withdraw my.
Well, I'm sure they know when our
yeah.
meeting date is,
well,
they so
they
will do
they
their best
the
to get them
right.
to us. But
right.
just curious. Yeah, on the lookout.
I don't know how I'm going to enjoy looking at all that information on the computer screen. I kind of like the old way that I could.
Yes, me too.
Go in and look at everything.
Yeah. Side by side.
Right, exactly. You could throw them there and yet sign everything in and out.
But I agree.
The old way. The confidentiality is really important. We talked about that previously. But there was a failed search recently because of a breach. A candidate's name became public before it should have. Search failed, so we have to be very careful about that. Any other questions I could answer in the search? And really, that's about all I know. I just don't think it's a good idea to spend that kind of money. But as it turns out, I guess it's going to save us a lot of work that we used to do on campus. So, and these folks, maybe I don't give them enough credit, and that's their job, and maybe. So far, I'm happy. It's with me. Roger.
I would agree. The thing is having never served on such a committee, I have been very impressed by their wealth of information and their direction and their guidance. So it's been a good experience.
And they're very responsive. I know I spoke to Brandy on Friday before Veterans Day, which is on Monday, on the 11th, and there were a couple of things that I was concerned about, and she took care of that immediately. I spoke to her about 3 o'clock Friday afternoon, forgetting that Monday was a holiday, but for them it was not. But by Monday morning, Brandy had responded. She had responded Friday afternoon, and everything was taken care of by Monday. So the response has been very great. And she made very clear that you can call her at any time, email, or speak to anyone at the firm. So it's been working. And I really appreciate Dr. Hoffman mentioning that to you, Karen. It's a bit of a concern to me. And again, it's been 20 years since we searched for a new president, and hopefully, you know, we're not going to do that again right away, assuming this is successful. So, impressing upon the faculty that that option's available and it has the support of Dr. Hoffman, I think it's important.
Okay.
Thank you. Our ACT conference was held in Saratoga a couple of weeks ago. Joel Rich attended. Yeah. Roger. Yeah. And Ornella. And we had a good time. We do have some informational type meetings that are informative. They do have a couple cocktail hours and dinner and so on. But that's important too, because you get to meet with other college councils throughout the state and pick up some valuable information. Ornella was presented with her ACT scholarship, which is very well received. I think when Ornella got up to accept the scholarship and indicating where she got where she is, if I can put it that way, the audience was very moved. I know if Ornella hadn't started, was going to start crying, I would have. But it was well received. And the other scholarship winners, too, I mean, it's just amazing the type of students that the State University of New York has. Weren't you impressed by the other students, too? Just amazing.
I mean,
some of these kids, if I can say kids, have accomplished more than most people do in their lifetime, and they're only 20, 22 years old. So it's really impressive, and I think the whole, I mentioned in my remarks that day, a lot of people in the country feel that we're somehow falling behind, but the future leaders, like these kids that we heard from that day, I think the future is it's in good hands. Anything else from the other members that attended?
No, and you hit the nail on the head when you said that, Ron. Honestly, you could not have been more impressed if you had been in attendance to listen as the accolades were presented on behalf of the five students, who received the scholarships. Absolutely incredible. I mean, I every one of them, and of course a little biased to Ornella, but I have to say, really, I was just taken aback, and I do believe Ron was exactly right. The future is in good hands.
What I thought was really amazing, Ornella, you know, is sitting there so quietly, but she actually controlled the room of probably 200 or 300. I don't know how many were there, but her comments were unbelievable, and I did cry. I wonder how your mom was doing, you know, after you explained that to so many. Do you want to tell anything about what you said to just this group? only because you said it before so many. You don't have to. But your mom's doing okay?
Yeah, she's fine.
There was another young man who received an award. His mom and dad were hearing impaired. And I think it was a Mr. Decker, if I'm not mistaken. And it was really moving to see the person signing everything as they went along. And then him going up and giving his mom and dad hugs and so on. It was really remarkable. And I would agree with Roger and Ron and their comments. And Dr. Hoffman, you were also there, and you.
Oh, yeah. And one of the things is that, you know, give credit to Ron, too, for the way he championed Ornella's submission, and also the very, very touching and moving presentation he gave before the award. So, Ron, you had us in tears at that point.
Yeah.
even June was crying a little bit. I saw that. but it was a great weekend. A lot of collegiality, another one of these great SUNY groups when they get together. I mean, just an opportunity to talk with the other college council members. And we did not boo the downstate medical people. a lot of self-control for that, but it was really a wonderful weekend. And congratulations to Ornella. And I, again, Roger, I'm with you. I mean, I just thought Ornella, of the four that were presented there. And the other thing is, she was the only one who's actually a member, who's a college council member. The others were not student government presidents.
Well, that's a good point.
A lot of their activities were not on the campus. And so I was very, very impressed. I think we represented well. And I think at the end, I think everybody was saying, boy, they're remembering Ornella. They're not remembering the other three.
I just want to point out, I was on the email, so.
And one other thing, along with the scholarship, the also awarded $250, $250, right?
I gave the college council, I mean, the foundation.
Thank you. Contribution to their favorite charity, and Ornella donated hers to the college foundation. So, again, showing that she appreciates the education she receives at SUNY Canton. One funny thing that happened, and I know Joe doesn't mind me saying this, because Joe was the founder of the Disabled Action Persons Organization in Watertown. Of course, he was always involved with people with, I don't know, is it proper to say handicaps or handicap? So anyway, Joe was always involved. And a number of years ago, the governor appointed Joe to a statewide disabled persons committee. And at the same time that Joe was appointed, the other two appointees were Helen Hayes and
Stevie Wonder.
There
was a three-member panel, and I was pretty active on the second floor at the time. So I didn't want Ron to think that I was making this story up.
Yeah.
So I brought in the news clipping. And here's a picture of Helen Hayes and me with the governor and so on.
And Joe Head here.
I was on his transition team.
But at the first meeting that Joe attended,
he was terrible.
Joe was sitting there wondering, I know how I got here, but who are these other two people? Okay, any questions? All right, the president's report, Dr. Hoffman. And I neglected to, obviously, you know that Dr. Hoffman and his wife also attended the act.
Right. And I had the privilege of presenting on shared governance.
That's right.
And also to make fun of Brian Huxley when he walked into the room.
Right.
So.
And Dr. Hoffman did an excellent job. It was the best presentation. I'm serious.
Yeah.
I'm serious, right? Right.
Yes, for sure.
Thank you.
And easy to understand.
Thank you. Well, since we're recognizing superstars, I mean, I don't think I could start my presentation without recognizing Marie Reagan for receiving the, I want to get this right, it's the Silas A. Wright Award, which she received at the Democratic Committee dinner. For me, the best part was when she got up there and the professor and her came out. Boy, she took us to school. It was a wonderful, wonderful presentation. So, Marie, congratulations, and we're all so proud of you and that accomplishment. As far as the campus, I'm continuing my enrollment management plan. I rolled it out to the campus leadership last week, just a template for them to fill in. But some of the things that we're doing hands-on is I've challenged the admissions staff to bring in a January class of at least 300 students. We've never had such an effort before. Last year, we brought in 170 students in January, but it was not a concentrated effort. So I've challenged them to take that to 300 students. And I've mentioned this before. Transfer students at community colleges, in other words, students that are completing their associate's degree in December, they're only now waking up that they have to apply to college if they intend to attend classes in January. So they're out there. So we have, you know, Jefferson, Clinton, North Country, and Adirondack. I mean, these students are looking for places to go, and I think we have the programs for these students. So as we're out there doing our fall recruitment, I think we can certainly step up this. So I've challenged them to bring in a class of 300. I've also challenged the faculty to retain 300 students. We have an advisement registration period, which is sort of a new format for us. We're not calling this early registration. This is registration. The students have up until the last day of final exams to register for their spring classes or have a hold put on their account and pay a $50 late fee for registration. On-time registration, it works in everybody's best interest. And we have 76% of the students already registered. And this is at the end. This is only a week and 2 days into the registration period. So I think we're beginning to change the culture for this. But when they meet with their advisors, we're having the advisors talk to them about their major, students in certificate programs laddering up to associate degree programs, students in associate degree programs laddering up to our bachelor's degree program. So it's an opportunity. So it is a retention effort that we can do, and it's built right into what we already do, but just ask them to step up. So I'm hoping that that will work. I've also been working with the faculty on changes to the bylaws. Some of the things that we're working on are reorganizing some of the committees and also that they can function better so that the faculty will have a voice in the way the school is run. And also we're working on department level promotion and tenure matrix. One of the things is a lot of faculty on this campus are not sure what they need to do to get reappointed, to get tenure, and to get promoted. It's not clear, and it should be very clear. So Karen and her deans and the department chairs, we're doing this department by department. And I think this will also help with retention of new faculty so they know exactly what's expected of them to succeed here at the college, which was not always clear. People will say, gee, I don't know if I'm doing enough. Well, now this is going to be laid out. They'll know exactly what they need to do, and that will help with our recruitment and retention of new faculty. And that's all I really have as far as other than covering meetings. And I've met with just about every committee on this campus. It's great to see things work, and things do work very well here. It's so people are out there working hard, so it's good to see that, and I'm happy to attend all these meetings. Karen, I think you're first up for academic affairs update.
Admissions, aside from bringing in a January class of 300, they're still looking at the fall. They have had three successful open houses this fall, over 300 people at each, and they broke some records, so that's good news. The registrar has been involved in getting students registered for next spring, but they're also working on what we call DegreeWorks, which is an electronic system for students and for faculty advisors to be able to view the students' progress. But we can go on and see it now, but it's not really in a format that's user-friendly. DegreeWorks, a student should be able to look in there and say, these are the courses I've taken in my major, these are the ones I still need to take, these, you know, where it says GER, social science elective, or list the possible courses. So it should help students and faculty make more informed choices. We hope to roll that out, pilot some programs in the spring, as they do, you know. Molly Mott reports from Student Services that student usage in areas of tutoring, career services, all those services, the students are using them more, which probably is a good sign. Our library staff, with Mike McGilligan, put a oral history project together with a World War II vet, which was very successful. Kingston Theater was standing room only. So that was one of the things. The Canino School of Engineering has gone through an ABET review, a site team visit a few weeks ago. They gave us a little report coming out. The faculty have some work to do with some assessment and some redefining things, but the dean is crossing his fingers and thinks those 3-4-year program in mechanical, electrical, and environmental and civil engineering technologies will be accredited. We received news that our PTA program has been reaccredited for 10 years, and that was a program that had some struggles. I think in the past we stretched it a little too big, and we had to revise some things. We have lowered some of the incoming class for fall in nursing. We were accepting 120 students. We're going back to 90 because finding clinical sites that satisfy the boards is just, we can't do it for 120 students.
Right.
So rather than risk the program, so admissions challenges got harder.
Is there any fix for that? I mean, do we see any opportunities in the future that will provide us with that those clinical hours at places where they can get what is required?
The only fix that I've worked with, talked to the faculty about, that, and they're piloting it, is that it's not so much either doing some of the clinical hours in a with those sim dolls, sort of a simulation, which... Yeah, that's the alternative they have come up with to investigate. But again, that is, it's not well received by the accrediting bodies typically.
And the reorganization of Canton, Potsdam, and Gouverneur hospitals into the St. Lawrence health system could go either way. Either we'll have more opportunities, or worst case, we could have fewer opportunities. We had some of the students doing their clinical in skilled nursing facilities, which is not the same. And so you could do a certain number of hours in that, because there are certain processes that you can do, but it's not enough to sustain it. So we did have to pull back from 120 to 90. We have a waiting list. You know, you talk about in-demand programs. Our nursing program is an easy one, but we can't get the clinicals up here in the North Country. It's just,
we use clinicals typically daytime hours, because hospitals operate 24 hours a day. Can we do the clinicals on the night shift, or is that...
You've got to remember, too, that our students, many of them don't have cars. They have great difficulty in getting to the sites that we have already, and that has to be taken into consideration. In fact,
and even though hospitals operate 24 hours a day, there are a lot of practices that only happen during, not surgery, and a lot of the really technical, really skilled areas that they need to be involved in. For their later year, later practices, it's only
typically eight in the morning till seven at night or something.
And we hire the clinical instructors, so you have to have the supply of instructors. So,
yeah, when we did switch, we used to just hire part-time clinical instructors. Well, this year we added some lecturers, and we have a full-time clinicians. That's their job here at SUNY-Canton, is they run clinical sites for us. We thought that would bring some more consistency.
You say they run clinical sites. They coordinate placements and...
No, that's our director does that. Okay. Right. These clinical instructors, they're actually at the hospital with the students.
Okay.
Being at the hospital on Monday mornings, they all come in. They carpool, and they're all coming in at the same time and reporting to different areas.
And, you know, we've got them placed... Malone, Watertown, like Marie said, that distance of travel is a big hurdle for our students, and especially in the winter months. Anytime they miss it, you know, if the weather's bad and they miss a day, they have to make it up sometime.
And one of the most daunting tasks in the nursing program is that clinical instructor who's there. That's not an easy job. I mean, that is daunting. I remember when I was here listening to some of the nurses and how, can you imagine watching a young student for the first time giving a transfusion or an IV and all these things, and basically you're responsible for seeing the patient, and yet you're instructing. I mean, I think that was a wise move to do what you could and do it right and well the way we have been doing it.
I know the clinical settings are a lot of hospitals, but what about these new places like the Summit that are affiliated with Samaritan and they have the assisted living and those other situations? Is that another opportunity or are you already there?
They do go into those as some of like the first semester nursing programs where they're learning to, you know, move them into a wheelchair, those type of low skill level things. But nurses do a lot more than what they can learn at those type of sites.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So once they've done their first semester rotation at some of those sites, mm-hmm. they need to be in a hospital.
Okay.
Is there any way we could provide assistance in the commute, the travel? I mean, has that been explored? Is it feasible, or is it just not a practical thing because of the different schedules that these folks might be on? I guess the program, I'm very passionate about it. I just had a niece who graduated from here and has secured a job down in Albany, and another niece who went to another nursing school. But I know that the demand, and as a baby boomer, it's all over the country. I think you have an excellent program here, and to have to cut back the number of students is just very disconcerting.
I mean, just to jump in, I know, you know, the transportation is something, like Marie said, and this came up even earlier this semester with students coming through student affairs asking for transportation, asking the student government to create, you know, transportation and have vans and drivers, and that's a huge issue. It's something that actually ironically just threw on the executive cabinet agenda for the next time we meet, because it is something that, you know, it comes up every semester.
I mean, it seems like a great investment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Watertown students, for example, you mentioned Watertown hospitals. Are they Watertown students that would go to the Watertown hospitals, or would they be?
Not necessarily.
I was wondering if that could be arranged so that more could be seen in the Watertown at Samaritan Medical.
But these students have to come back for their classes. Well, it's not like they just can be stationed for a period of time.
And we're also at the mercy of the hospitals in terms of the hospitals only want us in there so much. Hospitals will only take so many clinicals.
You don't know how many are in Watertown, for example.
Not off the top of my head, no.
Okay.
But
I think, Joe, you're running competition with the nursing program at JCC.
Mm-hmm. See? And that's part, like, that's Malone. We run into other, I mean, the only hospital.
Right.
We have a limited amount, you know, Canton Potsdam is the only one we're not in competition with other nursing programs for sites.
And I do have to say, in regard to the clinical instructors, you took some of my most favorite people I work with at the hospital. So I'm grinning on one side and crying on the other.
So at least we got good ones, right?
Oh, you did. Believe me.
Yeah.
But it's nothing we did lightly, and we, you know.
I understand.
But we can't, I guess, we can't sacrifice the quality of that program.
Right.
We have to be accredited.
But we will have the discussion about transportation, especially now we have the Ruse bus that may be able to service to some degree, if we can get them coordinated on a schedule, which would be an issue. And by the way, although we may be in competition at Claxton-Hepburn, the head of nursing at Claxton-Hepburn is one of our alums. So, and they do love our students at Claxton-Hepburn, I know that. Dave and I made a visit there, and you know, the people stopping us in the hall.
Who are we competing with at Claxton?
I think some of the JCC students might get placed there.
Claxton. They could come up 37.
Yeah. This is not an uncommon problem. We're not the only one facing it.
Mm, yeah.
And the other thing this underscores is we're strategically using lecturers for positions which in the past we either had them as adjuncts or part-timers. And so I think we've defined that position as something that's respectable. I mean, even in our classrooms, we're using some lecturers. And the way I'm describing them, these lecturers are craftspeople. They are great classroom teachers. And for the clinicians, that is what they do. And so these are people that are not going to be going on fraternal degrees or not going to be qualifying for academic rank. But we have an opportunity to recognize them with multi-year contracts. And a lecturer can be up to 3 years of an appointment. And if you've been here a while, you're giving them their next three-year appointment when they're only 1 year into their current appointment. So it is a commitment to the folks and let them know that they are valued. And should they indeed, decide that they want to go for that terminal degree, we can certainly turn that lecturer position into assistant professor position, because it is, we've committed to that line at the college, so it's easy enough to change it. So. I think the word we're using is we're strategically using lecturers as we see the need. But this is a win for us and a loss for some people.
Yes.
We are looking at our residency requirements. Right now, to graduate from SUNY Canton, you have to earn 30 of your credits here for a bachelor's degree and 15 for an associate's degree. We don't specify anything about what those credits have to be. The Academic Standards Committee is in the process of drafting the Go to Faculty Affairs that they would take that 30-credit residency requirement for bachelor's degrees and say maybe 15 of them have to be in the major so that someone isn't graduating with a degree from finance from SUNY Canton, never having taken a finance course from us. It hasn't, as far as I know, it hasn't happened, but we want to make sure it doesn't happen. So we're working on that.
Yeah, we had an associate's, we had an articulation agreement that was sort of being, we were being pressured to accept, and these students would have gotten an accounting degree from us, never having taken an accounting course here. So I asked the faculty, in other words, the challenge is, when Karen and I speak the words at graduation ceremony about on behalf of the faculty, we are, awarding these degrees, that's just not language. I mean, that's the way it is. And so I said to the faculty, I said, these students are receiving SUNY Canton degrees. What do you think they should have accomplished here at the college? Not only how many credits they took at SUNY Canton, but how many of those credits were in the major that they're receiving their degree in. And so, again, we did not have the major piece. We just had the credit piece. So we are, we don't want to increase the credit piece because we are very transfer friendly. But at the same point, we do want to make sure that we are comfortable with them having a degree that says SUNY Canton.
And we're also working on a grading policy, kind of refining some things about the grading policy in terms of, when can you give an incomplete? And when is it not appropriate to give an incomplete? When is it appropriate to change a grade? When you have a faculty member who is not available to assign the final grade, maybe because of an illness, what is the process to get that, and who can assign that final grade? And then we are also working on a SUNY mandate for seamless transfer. SUNY has come up with these transfer paths for various programs where they get their 30 credits of the Gen Ed, and usually about 4 or 5 courses in the major area that they want done in the first 2 years of a program. So a student could take their first 2 years almost anywhere in the SUNY system or community college and then transfer in as a junior at a variety of other places. For us, it's not as big of an issue as it is for some of the other colleges because most of our 2-year programs are AAS degrees, the Associate of Applied Sciences, and those, because they are not transfer degrees, they're designed for jobs, are not under that mandate. We have a few Associate of Science and Associate of Art programs that are under the mandate. We're making those changes necessary. We're also aligning our 4-year programs. For the most part, it just was a matter of taking a history course that they were listed in the 7th semester and moving it somewhere in the 1st or 2nd or 3rd, 4th semester and moving something else to the 7th semester. But we're doing that. We will be applying for some waivers for SUNY because part of that transfer initiative was the edict that you could only have 126 credits in your bachelor's program, which for many of our programs is not an issue. We're not even at 124. But it is for some engineering programs, for 4-year engineering programs, and a few others. So we're going to apply for waivers from SUNY for that. Hopefully we'll get them. If not, we have plan B of what we will do with the programs to make them conform. Thank you.
Thanks, Karen. Natalie?
Well, in human resources, we are in the process of a soft rollout of an electronic new employee applicant tracking system. We've been working on this project for almost a year now with People Admin to get this product rolled out to the campus so that we could actually have an automated hiring process. So we'd have an electronic application. They'd be able to submit their resumes and cover letters and references electronically. And then we'd actually be able to have electronic search committees access to certain searches electronically, similar to what you were talking about with the presidential search, and allowing us to eliminate paper. and actually speed up the hiring process because all of hiring approvals will all go electronically. We are testing it with one search right now. That's why I said a soft rollout, and provided that the workflow works properly and everything is functioning, we will roll it out for all searches, starting with the next searches coming up. So far, we haven't had any issues with it. That we're very excited about because it is actually going to save us a lot of time. Right now, paperwork passes back and forth across the campus for various approvals once hiring happens. And this will eliminate all of that, eliminate the prospect of lost paperwork, which we have had in this past year. So we are very excited to see that finally coming to fruition. Yesterday, though I missed it, we had an exciting day. We had a water main break outside of Smith Hall. Unfortunately, it is not something that our people can fix. We have sent a declaration of campus emergency to the state construction fund so that they would free up some funding for us and some ability to contract with somebody that can come in and dig it up and fix it for us. Right now, I'm being told, as of this morning, that the water can't be completely shut off, but we haven't had to evacuate Smith Hall, that we have a continual leak, and as soon as the construction fund gets a hold of me today, we should be able to get a contract in place and get that the repair work started. But right now, they're telling me that it is not an imminent danger, it's just we are leaking water. We have rolled out a mandate. SUNY has come out with compliance training initiative for the 64 campuses. This is in response to mandated employee training that New York State has rolled out. Apparently, it's been in the works for many years, and SUNY has never been in compliant with New York State mandates. So we have developed here, as part of our shared services with Potsdam, a compliance training program. There are 21 campus and state mandated trainings that the employees have to go through. Some of them are annual, some of them are every 3 years, some of them all in once that the state is requiring that we train employees in. We are actually way ahead of what SUNY has rolled out. SUNY just rolled out the idea of this compliance training and has never given any structure to it. We are actually well down the path and ahead of all the other SUNY campuses. We have rolled out the first round of training, and here at Canton, we are 100% compliant, which is amazing. And actually at Potsdam, we are 98%, which is amazing. Generally, if you can get to 80 to 85%, you're doing really well. Mm-hmm. So we have done an outstanding job, and I do want to recognize Stacy Basford. She is the compliance training coordinator that we have, and she has done phenomenal work in getting this program up and running and shepherding it forward. We are being recognized by other SUNY campuses for the work that we've done, and actually Plattsburgh and Clinton Community College have recently signed on with us for us to offer their compliance training. They will pay a per-head cost per employee plus an administrative fee to us to administer their training, which helps with us as it saves us on our costs. And we've just been approached this morning by SUNY ESF to find out whether or not they would like to sign on with us to offer their training as well. Big kudos to Stacy for all the work that she's done on that. We will be rolling out round two in the next couple of weeks. Throughout the next year, we will get the 21 mandated items rolled out. The system that we're using is an electronic training system that we are developing each program electronically, and we are able to track all the employees that have taken it so that it's instant dashboards so that we can see who needs reminders on the training and who doesn't. I was invited to speak at a shared services conference for higher education last week in San Diego. Actually due to weather, I just got in late last night. It took 2 days to get home because of the weather in Chicago, but we are actually, SUNY Canton and SUNY Potsdam are actually being highly touted in the higher education community now in the shared services realm for our innovative new business processes paradigm. We are not fully to a shared services model yet. There's certain structures that happen to be what they would consider a true shared services model. But we are actually being looked at by a number of institutions across the country. They're trying to replicate the model that we actually have. So at the end of the talk that I gave, I was approached by the University of New Mexico, several institutions in California, and one in Illinois to actually get more information on what we are doing, because we've actually been able to get a process put forward, bringing together two campuses that are culturally diverse and unique institutions, and we are actually really being developing a name for ourselves. So the institution should be proud of what we've been able to accomplish. That's about it.
Great. Just a question on that water main break. Is that do you have consideration in case of fire because of that?
No. I checked with our plant superintendent. He said that is not an issue at this point in time. But we do want to get it fixed as soon as possible. That was why we declared the campus emergency, so that we could get contracts pushed through a lot quicker.
One other thing, too, and I forgot for the information for the College Council, when we were at the ACT meeting, and already Brian Huxley is no longer the CFO. Has he been replaced with someone?
Bob Halen, who is the head of the construction fund, is interim CFO for the system. They are looking to start a search here soon, from what I'm hearing, because that's a big job between the CFO and the construction fund to be over top of both. Brian was moved to a vice chancellor of shared services, and he has since left. He is now the vice president at Colgate.
Where is he now?
Colgate University.
Really?
Yes. In fact, tomorrow, I believe, is his last meeting with SUNY, and then he is officially gone.
Dave, you're on.
Yes, thank you, Natalie. I will be spending the afternoon compliance training, and I might need some coffee donations from individuals. So a few things to report. We recently awarded the Canton College Foundation awarded $30,000 in campus enhancements, part of a program. We had wonderful proposals across the campus, students and faculty and staff, and what a joy to be able to spend that money in supporting the college. So write this down. Grab your pen. smile.amazon.com. So instead of going to amazon.com, go to smile.amazon.com. Your full Amazon experience, you won't notice anything different, but you can specify a charitable organization of your choosing. Canton College Foundation. And 0.5% of your purchases will be given back to the foundation. Now, it's not a lot of money, but I am trying my best to spend all of the purchases the Canton College Foundation is doing on behalf of faculty and staff through that website to get a little pushback. And so you won't notice a difference, but if you would consider that, that would be wonderful. Very heavily cold suffering, Dr. Hoffman came last week to Syracuse. We had a board member host a wonderful event of over 30 alumni, sponsored by her and her husband, and a great gathering, a good presentation, fighting off the cold, and another area that I think we haven't been back to in gathering purposes for a few years, and I think we'll be getting back there more. I hope you saw in the newspaper, you'll see it today, We had a wonderful Terry Martin weekend last weekend. We had an alum purchase a statue that now resides outside of the athletic center. And we had a wonderful weekend. Over 100 hockey players came back honoring Terry Martin's esteemed career, and some very nice presentations. Again, Dr. Hoffman was one of the presenters, and I thought our alum, Dick Leo from the class of 76, some may know Dick from his days in Messina and playing at Canton and at St. Lawrence, but his presentation was one of the most phenomenal that I've seen, and he just had pencil scratches for his presentation, so just was fantastic. This week we will award the second round of faculty staff awards, and we will begin review of the doctoral thirds program, a donation prior by the College Association has provided funding for pre-training funds, and we have a significant group of faculty staff awards to review. I took it upon myself and roped my assistant in, and mainly because we had an alum whose family had given a lot of money to the college, and I always thought I would send a care package. Before I got to that care package, this alum was wounded in Iraq and almost lost both of his legs. So I heard of another alum who I advised, and Norm posted on Facebook after me trying to visit with him at Fort Drum that he's in Afghanistan. So your SUNY Canton here donated over 500 pounds of supplies, food, clothing, and items totaling over $2,800 that yesterday we shipped to Afghanistan. And thank you, student government, the Student Cooperative Alliance, the Greek Council, and I don't remember how many, but a wide variety of people donated to that. And I sent the list of items to Norm, and he and I had a chat on Facebook yesterday, and very appreciative, just blown away and appreciative of his alma mater. Finally, some of you may have received our Stelter Plan Giving newsletter, and we're working this new angle to try to establish longer-term giving as people plan their estates and their end-of-life thoughts and possibly charitable trusts now. And one of my most very favorite alumni, I think she's the class of 46, I'm pretty sure she is, Peggy has spent a lot of time with, and I visited with her a number of times in Arizona. She gave us notice in writing of her entire estate is coming to the college, valued at this point of over $1.3 million. And very excited about that. And so, you know, if anybody else wants to sign up before you leave for that $1.3 million thing, we can work that out. So that's all I have.
And I do have to tell you, Dave, I've attended the Campus Enhancement Award and the Faculty Staff Award. Dave does a wonderful job at those meetings, and sort of like the search firm, he does all the legwork, and we just sit there, and we have a very easy read of what we have to do, and Dave actually puts his comments in there. He says, tells us to ignore it, but they're in boldface and underlined, but they're very well run, and again, the awards that were given out were just so appreciated across the campus.
It's not like me to be bold.
Courtney again.
Courtney again. I know. How did I show up on the agenda so many times? I guess I'll start with the less great news. I'm sure those of you who are local and have seen media coverage know we had a hazing incident that happened on our campus. It didn't happen on our campus, excuse me. It happened with our students. We became aware of a week ago yesterday, so on Veterans Day, we became aware of this incident with Zeta Alpha Phi fraternity. We handled it pretty quickly. The seven students who were involved were placed on interim suspension immediately and have undergone judicial hearings and a full review, sort of like the discussion we had last time I was here when I talked about the disciplinary process. As of yesterday, four We have 4 suspensions and 2 expulsions. The suspensions are 5- and 6-year suspensions. The expulsions were for the pledge master and the president, who were the key students involved in the hazing. It included physical and mental abuse. So it was a pretty significant incident. You know, we moved quickly. We have 1 more hearing today, and fully plan by the end of today to make an announcement that Zeta Alpha Phi fraternity will no longer be recognized by the college. We had an incident in 2006, for anybody who remembers that. There was a hazing incident. As far as I'm concerned, this is a 2-strikes-you're-out policy. Zeta Alpha Phi has a long and storied history with the college. We hate to cut ties, but unfortunately it's a risk that I don't feel we can take as the college at this point, and that announcement will hopefully come out later today. So I wanted you folks to be the first to know that that was the direction that we were taking with that. I don't know if there's any questions on that before I move out of the bad news and into the good news territory.
I just like to say that you did a very nice job on television.
Thank you.
It was very reassuring. It made it very clear that there was going to be an immediate response and consequences for the students.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I would echo that.
Great job,
Courtney.
Thank you. We've had a good response from the parents of the victims, that we've handled this quickly and appropriately. They were local students here from the North Country and families in the area, so I think that there was some comfort that the college was, as soon as we were aware, we moved quickly. So I certainly credit Dr. Hoffman and Travis and Lenore and the PR team. I mean, what I said on the news, the PR team gets the credit for. I mean, I was the face, but they were the words. So, it's been a rough couple of weeks with SUNY Canton in the news, but we've tried to move pretty swiftly on anything that we're aware of. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
You handled it very properly, and you responded quickly, which is the key to it. And I thought it was very well handled.
Thank you.
From a news perspective.
We don't want to let this. We didn't want to let it fester. We wanted to wrap it up and let us go back to business. And the unfortunate thing is that Greek life on our campus is actually, generally speaking, very positive. As I mentioned in some of the other news venues, we just participated for the first time in 7 years in Phantoms in the Park over the Halloween time. Our Greek students volunteer every Friday at our local soup kitchen at the Grace Episcopal Church. So generally, by and large, a positive group of students and such a small fraction of our overall population, but unfortunately the bad news, you know, it rises to the top. So hopefully, you know, this will be behind us, but if you have any questions, I'm certainly glad to answer those at any time.
And we thank SUNY Cortland for having 30 students arrested and getting us out of the headlines. So
they not only made headlines, but I don't know if everyone's familiar. I don't know how often people spend time on the internet, but there's this site called BuzzFeed, and they do these elaborate things that everyone who's on Facebook and Twitter, they spread all over the place. Cortland made a BuzzFeed over how bad their incident was, and I read it and thought, at least we're off the radar for right now. So, you know, you have to pick your battles. I don't envy my colleagues at Cortland, who I know well and know that I'm sure they are suffering immensely right now. So I'm glad it's not me. But on the positive side, athletics. Athletics is always going to be our shining star in student affairs. We wrapped up the USCAA National Volleyball Tournament ending the week of November 2nd. And while we didn't make it to the top of it, it was a wildly successful event. They want to come back and host with us again in the coming years, which is great. It was a really positive time. We took our men's ice hockey team to the Herb Brooks 1980 Olympic Arena and had a game there. Unfortunately, we didn't do so well. We lost 11-1, which is... I sat next to Dr. Hoffman, and I think between the shrieking and crying and carrying on, but we were happy to be in the Herb Brooks Arena. It was amazing. It was an amazing experience, and that's all that really matters. We're in talks with the Special Olympics again to host again this year. That was a very successful event last year, and they loved what we did, and they really want to work with us. So we've had our first meeting and plan to host again this spring.
And while we're on athletics, Liz, who's currently the faculty athletic representative for NCAA, we've instituted a faculty academic liaison, athletic liaison. So every team has a faculty member who is serving as a liaison so they can tell the great stories about our student athletes to the other faculty. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, they always miss class, they always do this, they always do that. And yet you look at the GPAs, they have higher GPAs than the average student on the campus. So I thought this was important. So as we make our bid for NCAA, you know, we're still in year two of our provisional. I think this is something that we can do. And the faculty athletic rep will be chosen from among the faculty athletic liaisons. So these are people actually involved in the teams. So I think it's another nice connection for our students and for our faculty.
And also with athletics, we had 17 USCAA All-Americans with GPAs of 3.5 or higher. That's amazing. I mean, Dr. Hoffman just spoke about how well our student athletes do, and that's just a testament to the program that we have here on campus. So athletics, if you see Randy Siminski, you know, give him and his coaching staff the kudos. It's been a wonderful year in athletics. We actually just got done hosting the hashtag 4CO Associated Colleges Leadership, Student Leadership Conference on our campus, and the ridiculous hashtag 4CO, I'm not young enough maybe to sound cool when I say it, but it was a conference hosted with the four colleges in the area. We had about 100 students on our campus and faculty and staff from those campuses, and we brought in a guest speaker who was nominated by President Obama for a special award. His name's R.L. Moody. He was fantastic. The students really connected with him, and we had a really great time. So that was another really huge positive. Just happened the last weekend, the weekend before, I know.
The ninth.
Thanks. I was there. I just don't remember the day. and I think that's basically it for me.
Thank you, Courtney. Lenore?
Thanks. I'd like to reiterate just how wonderful and important the Veterans event was that our librarian Mike McGilligan put together. He interviewed World War II veterans, I think 33 interviews, and more people have asked to be a part of the project, and he's finding more people. He had the veterans and many of their families on campus, again, to a standing room only Kingston Theater, and awarded them with challenge coins from our Veterans Association, and put together a wonderful presentation that included snips of some of the stories that these veterans told in kind of chronological order going through the war, both in Europe and the Pacific Theater. Very moving, lots of tears of appreciation and remembrance from veterans and their families. We had presence here from Fort Drum and other major military figures, both active duty and retired. So I think that was a really positive event for our campus, and I think shows, again, our commitment to our military veterans and active duty service members.
And I think Mike's that they're going to be in the Library of Congress.
Yes, the stories will be in the Library of Congress. Yeah. And this really was a kickoff and a launch event, because he'll continue to interview veterans from World War II, but then moving on to other wars that the United States has been involved in over time, so Korea, Vietnam, and moving forward. It'll be a wonderful treasury of the experiences of veterans in the North Country, and it'll be really a national archive. So that will be housed here. So
that's wonderful.
It was a wonderful event, and he put a tremendous amount of time and effort into it. So congratulations to him. We have contacted and we've gotten a commencement speaker for this spring, which is very exciting. He is an alum of SUNY Canton. He is a surgeon, and actually a very well-known surgeon, who has made a name for himself doing complex abdominal surgeries. And when I asked him to be the commencement speaker, he was just scrubbing out for a few moments from a complex surgery with 14 other surgeons. And his piece was done, so he was going to grab a bite and give me a call back. he has great affection and love for SUNY Canton, feels that it gave him the basis for the rest of his career. He's appeared nationally on television talking about a particular surgery where he removed a 51-pound tumor from a woman's abdomen. She was near death. And he continues to do that kind of surgery, kind of the last hope surgery for people that maybe other surgeons won't touch. He's an incredibly impressive guy and loves this place. So I think he'll be really inspirational for our students and the rest of us on campus as well.
What's his name?
Oh, sorry. Dupree. David Dupree?
David Dupree. And we actually did a story on him in After Canton.
Yeah.
So I could read about him in the next couple weeks.
That publication will be coming out. Sure. So. And finally, I've been working on economic development initiatives, particularly Startup New York, which some of you may be familiar with. It's the governor's initiative to create tax-free zones on SUNY and other campuses and around those campuses. We've been working to develop a plan with the St. Lawrence County IDA to have very limited space on campus, but more extensive space off campus that we can offer through this program. And we've actually gotten several bites, if you will, from companies that are wishing to start up, expand, or relocate to the area. Some of them may or may not fit into the confines of the relatively narrow of what the program will accept. It really focuses on research and development and manufacturing. But some really do look very promising and harness the expertise that we have in the area and also the expertise that we have on campus. So the great thing about this program is that it offers an opportunity to bring new jobs to the area, which we all know we quite desperately need. But it also gives an opportunity for our students to benefit, because as part of these partnerships, we can say we expect a certain number of internships per year. We expect you to look seriously at our students for hiring upon graduation. Those kinds of things that can really benefit our campus and our students. So I think it's a very positive program. We'll be putting in our official application to Empire State Development probably towards the beginning of 2014. And some of those business applications with the companies we've been working with will go along with that. So I think it has a potential to be very positive.
And we have marquee properties in Messina, I think two in Ogdensburg.
Yes.
And again, our requirement is that the companies are not competing with companies that are already established in the area, and that the properties off campus are already off the tax rolls. We don't want to designate something and take it off the tax. So if they're not paying taxes now, then they're open. And so we had one property in Ogdensburg. Now we have two.
Yes.
So
through the Ogdensburg Bridge and Port Authority, partnering with them. So it's very positive. And with Travis's help, we've created a website that gives, if you're interested, that will provide information about how our campus is approaching the program, and links to the governor's page, Empire State Development, and if you want to get really deep into it, the law and regulations. So all those links are provided. Michaela sent you before the link to the brief overview that I set up. That same website is now the more extensive version. So it's canton.edu/startup, all one word. If you'd like to take a look at that, you're more than welcome. And if you have any feedback, comments, suggestions, ideas for me, please do let me know. It's a work in progress. That's all for me.
Thank you. Liz?
We have been diligently working this semester with all of our governance committees to update their bylaws, look at the composition of the committee, see if changes needed to be made. As of today, we have 6 out of our 9 governance committees have updated their bylaws. Some have actually revamped the entire committee function, and they've addressed having some additional subcommittees associated with them. We've also been updating our general campus governance bylaws, so addressing faculty assembly, the committee structure, who can vote, who can attend, all of those. We're shooting for a target date of February to have our entire governance bylaws updated so our committees can be fully staffed with new composition, elections in place. We're also doing our elections at our December 5th faculty assembly meeting. And I've been reminding people through email, which has been working really well, we have probably the most amount of people who have self-nominated themselves for the committee elections. A very, very good blend of tenured faculty and new faculty. So this is probably the first time in a while we've had a significant amount of people for each open position to run an election. And I think that's pretty much it for our faculty affairs. We have our one more faculty assembly meeting this semester, and then our next one will start up again in February.
And again, Liz is doing a wonderful job as our campus governance leader, representing us not only in the campus, but in the SUNY-wide venue as well. Charles?
You're a 299 now. I just recruited a management student where I was. He was in charge of Connolly Rental Property. It was a $10 million business he ran. He said, I don't have a Bachelor of Arts degree. Can you help me? And I said, put together a portfolio. We'll give you life credit for what you've done. Obviously, if you run a $10 million business, you've done something important. And he'll start in January. The from the the fact that we attended the great SUNY campus of Maritime there, and we heard the chancellor speak. It was at the faculty assembly meetings. The each sector, including the CGOs, get a chance to ask the chancellor and the provost, SUNY provost, questions. From our perspective, our sector, we were most concerned about the presidential rollouts and to make sure that whatever SUNY had decided, it was complete. I had several documents that I brought back for the president. The president's looked at those and given them back to me there. From another perspective, I just want to say my own program before I stop, we took second place in an entrepreneurship competition. We're going to go to three competitions this year to try and bring home more awards to show that SUNY Canton management and other students can do it. We're attempting to go to Santa Ana. Thank you, Dave, for your contribution to that.
Kent College Foundation.
Yeah, Kent College Foundation for that. We're going to go to Plattsburgh, and we're going to try again and compete in the entrepreneurship competition for startup in the Startup New York. It's in April. So we'll have three of those competitions. So we're going to try and keep on going. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Charles. Travis.
As Courtney mentioned, PR has been quite busy the last few weeks, so I want to focus on some positive things. We've been working closely with Brandy Collins at RPA to develop some materials for our presidential search candidates. We developed the search prospectus that I think went out last week to candidates, and we also developed the website that went public, just the public website that not everyone has access to. That's on our main campus website on the bottom right-hand corner. So we'll be searching for our fourth president. There was some discussion about what number we're at, but we're at fourth president as a fully inaugurated president. Beyond that, we've been working with the College Foundation and Dave and his folks to develop our latest edition of After Canton. I think this is one of the best publications the college has ever put out. And as you can see, here's a little teaser. I won't pass this around. You'll have to wait till we get the copy in a couple weeks. This went out to the printers yesterday, so hopefully first week of December, second week of December, you should be receiving that. We're featuring Danny and Linda Fay on the cover. They've supported the college in a number of ways, through scholarships, through their faculty positions affecting thousands and thousands of students and members in the community. So thought it'd be appropriate to honor them on the cover, and then there's a feature on the inside. So look out for that in a couple weeks. Also look out for our new commercials. We're just putting the last finishing touches on those, a couple of minor edits. So those should be rolling out, again, probably around the same time you get After Canton in a couple weeks, just after Thanksgiving. So again, I think this is one of the best commercials that we've put together, so I hope everyone else sees that the same way, and that'll all come together. And then I was also told this morning that John Fryer was actually interviewing Randy Siminski about the Terry Martin weekend, so that'll be a nice little feature, hopefully tonight, or if not tonight, tomorrow. So that's it from PR.
Great. Thank you. Ornella?
Hi, everyone. for student-wise, like Courtney already mentioned, the hashtag 4CO was on the 9th, but I won't be going to that since we covered that. it's fine. A couple things that passed. We had a student, international student from Sri Lanka, Lakeisha Perrier. She had got chosen to speak on behalf of the research subcommittee of Texas Physical Therapy Association. She was lacking the funds, but with the help of student government and thanks to the president's office, she was able to go present October 23rd to 28th, and she's very thankful of that. She keeps, every time she sees me, thank him. So, also, we had our first female probate on our campus this week and last weekend that passed, October 16th, Beta Sigma Zeta. We had our first female probate. They crossed their first line on campus. Well, that's their second line, right?
It's their first line because it was a founding class, but you should probably tell them what probate is.
Oh, a probate is...
They probably don't know that.
Okay, it's a Greek celebration for their line that crosses. It's basically they reveal who crossed, a little history on the organization. And we typically have male probates, and this is our first female one this year, so that was good. Also, We have SUNY, Generation SUNY is doing a Music Madness, and a good part about it is one of our students is in the run-ins to be for the award. Basically, Music Madness is a way for SUNY students with original music and talent to gain exposure, and they also will be voted on between, the first round is started yesterday, and it will continue until the 24th, and the top five with the most votes goes on to semifinals. And at this moment, our his stage name is Zuraz. He submitted and he made it, and at this point, he's sixth place, but he has until Sunday. So he's representing SUNY Canton, because in his thing, it says SUNY Canton, that's his name on the side. So he's looking for a way to get more votes. Right now, he's advertising through Facebook and stuff like that. We use the student activities page also to help him, but if y'all could spread the word, that would be nice.
If send me some info, I can get it out over the faculty staff and get people voting.
All right. Also, our last student government meeting will be December 4th when we come back. We're going to wrap it up with, of course, our Senate and budget meeting, but we're also going to have a holiday, luncheon, basically, and we're going to award all our Senates that are leaving, where we're trying to award all the Senates that are going to be leaving this semester and won't be here at the end of May, because we normally do awards at the end of May for all clubs and senators that are active. But for those, for Michael Triple, if you're on Michael, Doug, and those, they're leaving at the end of this semester, so, and they've been active since they're here, so we're trying to do a little award for them also. And that's it.
Thank you, Anna. Dave, UUP.
Morning, everybody. This is my first year of service as UUP president, and UUP stands for the United University of Professions. And statewide, there are more than 35,000 members on 29 state-operated campuses and the system administration. Locally, we have more than 380 members. There's about 248 full-time members and 135 part-time, but that number fluctuates depending on what time they take the picture. We are comprised of academic and professional titles. There are more than 526 job titles within the state, and it reflects the diversity of UUP and the state university. We have an ad campaign on TV. There's an ad out. It runs locally on the TV. Fred Cowell is our new statewide president, and the promotional campaign is We Open Doors. It's a very good ad. I'm very proud of that. UEP negotiates with the state of New York for our contract. It was recently ratified, and the implementation has been a lot of work between Dr. Hoffman and I and HR. The highlights, it runs from 2011 to 2016, and the first couple of years, of course, are zeros. We've had a $500 on base raise for all members, and it's prorated for part-timers. There's a couple other monetary incentives, service awards for tenure and continued appointment. That's a $500 raise, and that was backdated to 2011. And also for our Appendix A titles, the five-year appointments, they also get that award. And then Dr. Hoffman had the pleasure of implementing our discretionary salary awards, which was a 0.5% amount of money. It was approximately $92,000, and it had to be split up for part-timers. About $38,000 was an across-the-board award to part-timers, so it was about $285 per part-time member. And then the full-time awards was $53,000, and that was achievement-based. The members had to apply through their division supervisors. And those awards were $500, $750, or $1,000 awards. Limited, there was only so many to go around. Statewide President Fred Cowell was on campus to meet the membership last Thursday to talk about contract implementations, and he was well received, and I appreciated his visit to come way up. He was a member, a teaching faculty on Cobalt Skills campus, so he knows our mission and understands our membership. Our end of semester UUP party is going to be December 6th at the club in Canton. If you'd like to attend, please stop in. That's my report.
Thank you, Dave. And I know the UUP folks as well as myself, we're a little disappointed that the discretionary salary award was an award and not a base pay increase. When it, the old DSI, discretionary salary increase, allowed us to address disparity. So we could actually look to people that were not making the money that they should be making, but you can't do that with a lump sum award. So we went completely with merit and achievement for those awards. But this is the first year we've ever done a discretionary salary award. So we decided to go with significant amounts. So they were $500, $750, and $1,000 awards for the UUP full timers. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Any questions for the president's report at all? Just a couple other things. Again, a reminder to leave the reservations for the December 6th meeting with Michaela. And you also received a copy of the College Council calendar for 2013-14 in your backup for your information. And a new revised copy of the College Council members. I might mention to you, Marie asked me this when Marie first came on the council, why her appointment was so short. You came out in 2012 or 13, I can't remember. But it was either 2012 or 13. What it is, it's a particular 13. It was, it's right there. It's a particular position or college council member that you're filling a term for. For example, Cecily Morris has indicated that she will be resigning. Once she was elected to family court judge, it's almost impossible for her to meet, to attend meetings. So, for example, when the governor appoints a replacement for Cecily, that individual's term would end in 2015, which would have been the end of Cecily's term. So that's how, why those dates are kind of messed up. And if you wonder why someone's appointed, Marie thought maybe they just wandered around for a year or two. So that's she was so old. but anyway, just for your information. Is there anything else to come before the meeting today? Again, I want to thank you all for coming today. I think it's the first time in a long time that we've had all College Council members here other than Cecily. We have full board. And that's important to show support for not only the college, but also for Dr. Hoffman. I appreciate it very much. And our next meeting will be the 6th. And that day you get to stick around and have a dinner over at the Alumni House. That's where it is afterwards. So. That would be a real treat. That's part of the remuneration package that you receive as a College Council member. And Dave, maybe the next time you're negotiating, you can work us in, that's fine. We don't care if it's a one-time award or how it's paid, as long as it's paid.
Yeah, big news all around.
Oh, okay. they're deductible, right? Okay, anything else? All right, thank you all for coming. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved by Tom, second by Colleen. All in favor?
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm suddenly so much.
Yeah.
The resolution's coming up.